Hey everyone, welcome to The Next Level, a podcast from the Team Performance Institute. Here we provide actionable insights on modern leadership and team development, driving higher levels of organizational performance and life empowerment. I'm your host, John Sanchez. Join me and my team as we take you on the journey to the next level.
Well, yeah, you know, I definitely think that is, you know, it's a healthy part of living is consuming the right things in moderation, right? Like your restaurant has won various awards. Tell us a little bit about your wine award. You just won an award like 3 years ago. Was it 2 years ago?
I can't remember. I think 18 or 19.
20. Oh my gosh. It's been 5 years now.
Yeah. Well, post-COVID era time is different. You know, it's like
a time warp.
There used to be 365 days in a year. Now there's like 11.
Yeah, that's true. But tell us about, so top 100. Yeah. Wine enthusiast.
Yeah. When I first opened the restaurant, I carried one brand of wine. It was Burnett Ridge.
Oh, I love me some Burnett Ridge.
One of our Chip. He is my favorite winemaker. He's one of the nicest guys on the planet. Just a really great friend of me for a long time. And he makes these phenomenal wines.
Yeah.
And he's buying fruit from California for the most part and bringing it here to Cincinnati and making the wine here. So, but anyway. It's phenomenal, and it's always been incredibly affordable. 15 years ago, it was probably like $18, $20 for a bottle of wine.
Yeah.
And now it's 30, right?
Yeah.
And so I carried just his wine, and I carried it because I believed that was the best wine that you could get for the value.
I still do. It is. I mean, I buy cases of it. If you haven't been to the Wildflower Cafe, small commercial plug for my man, Todd Hudson here. You got to get there, buy at least a case of Burnett Ridge wine. And it is amazing. I'm a big fan of the Purple Trillium.
Yeah.
There's many, many different wines, but that's like,
which is the state flower of Ohio.
Really?
Yeah. The state wildflower of Ohio.
The state wildflower.
Which was named before I opened my restaurant and called it Wildflower, which then our number one selling wine is Purple Trillium, which is totally clearly evidence that randomness does not exist.
That's true. It's divine providence. And so, maybe that is the case. Because I buy cases of Purple Trillium.
For a long time, I described Chip as like he's the older version of me. Like if I was 70 today, I would be Chip Emmerich.
Yeah.
So I carried that wine, and I thought, you know, well, if the Sanchez are going to come in and have dinner with me, you know, can I get them a great bottle of wine? Absolutely, I can. Absolutely. Any restaurant can. It's a matter of, do you want to pay 300, 100, 10?
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, $25-$30 is a very, very affordable price to make it accessible for everyone. I don't want someone to come. I never want someone to come into my restaurant or to avoid eating at my restaurant because they can't afford it.
Right.
And I know that's an awkward thing, but I wish people would come in if they wanted to dine there and just come in and say, I can't afford to eat here, but I'd love to bring my wife in because I'll buy your meal.
Right.
And there's probably 20 people in the dining room at any point that would be willing to buy your meal.
Right.
Because it's just an amazing culture of people there. But so I had Burnett Ridge, and I thought, you know, for $25, $30, this is a rock star. This is perceived value is the biggest thing in restaurants.
Yes.
And to drink a bottle of wine and walk out and go, you know, I would have paid $70 for that.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I felt about that wine. So ironically, a lot of people who didn't really know much about wine weren't familiar with that wine. Because it's made in Cincinnati, they would say, My wine list is a joke. And I thought that's okay. But I drink wine all day, every day. I've tasted 20,000 wines. There is no, Jeff Bezos hasn't tasted 20,000 wines.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not an income thing. It's that, you know, when you're in the business, we do that all the time.
Yeah,
all the time. You know, I tasted 14 wines yesterday. So I knew what we were doing was legit. I knew people that knew wine really well. They knew it was legit. We expanded the program. I started putting wines away in the cellar. And I was putting, I always think of Rich Parducci from McNabb Ridge and Greg Graziano from Graziano and Enotria. And I was putting these little $10 bottles of wine away because they were phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew what they were going to develop into. And so I started doing that. And the next thing you know, I've got a thousand bottles in my basement with the intent of bringing those back to the restaurant and saying, which to this day, no one really cares about vintages and how old the wines are and whatever else, but I did. And I wanted to say, hey, I've got a 10-year-old bottle of wine that's prime time. That's a Barbera from Enotria in Mendocino, California, made by a rock star, Greg Graziano. And I'm going to sell it to you for $25. Nobody was doing anything like that.
Yeah.
And I've never been to a restaurant that's doing anything like that. For $250, maybe. And it started rocking people's minds, you know. And I still had some haters, which I think anybody that's doing, if you don't have haters, you're probably not doing something. You need to up your game.
You're not pushing the limits,
right? How many targets did Michael Jordan have on his back?
Right.
And
don't,
you know,
limit your challenges. I got written on my list right here.
Yeah. So you know, and the beauty of it was I would have these people in, and I'm not one of those people that thinks French cuisine or Europeans are the smartest people, whatever, when it comes to food. But I will say every person from New York that's ever been to my restaurant will leave and tell you, your restaurant is the best, and I know because I'm from New York.
Yeah. Yep.
And there may be some truth in that. And so when I would see people that were visiting that were from Chicago, New York, LA, Europe, Switzerland, wherever, South America, when these people would come in and they were stunned. You know, they were like, the food is amazing. Your wine list is amazing. The pricing is amazing. Your coffee is amazing. And a lot of people would say, I haven't had a meal like this. I haven't had a cup of coffee. I haven't had something like this in America, period.
Yeah.
And so I knew that we were on something.
We do get a lot of, like here in Cincinnati, we have a lot of Fortune 500 companies that bring in executives, Procter & Gamble being one of them.
Right.
Just a very international community. And just to add, just to pile on, I didn't mean to slow you down here, but like, when we went there, again, my wife, Anya, she, you know, been around the world, eaten all over the place. She studied in Italy, for crying out loud, France, all these great places. Came in and said, this is, you know, your Valentine's Day meal. She said, it's the best meal I've ever had in my entire life. And I agree with her. I mean, every time I get down, I say the same thing. But
You know, it hits certain things. You know, everything's done by hand and all that. It's dependent upon who's cooking. And what dish it is and how passionate they are about it, that, you know, you have those experiences. But so I had all these people saying this, you know, saying that the wine program's great. And at the same time, I had people saying it's comical. And next thing I know, and I had busted out, I had collected all these wines. I busted out this like big multi-page. I put it in a really fancy book.
Oh, really?
You know, and I had back vintages.
The big restaurant book.
Yeah.
That you get, here's your wine list.
But ours, you know, has always been no BS.
Yeah.
That there's
books
no...
intimidating to me.
It is.
You know, I sit in a restaurant. I don't know. I know what I like. I just don't know how to pick it.
I'm a sommelier and I go to restaurants and I'm flipping through these pages and I'm like, I don't have a clue what that is.
Oh, really?
Like I've never heard of that producer.
Good. I'm glad I'm not alone on that one. Cause I'm just like, I could probably order a $200 bottle of wine. It'll probably be good, but it might not.
I mean, Italy grows like 10,000 different types of grapes, like different, you know, from Cab, Merlot, et cetera, you know, 10,000 different varieties.
Wow.
So, you know, it's a massive thing to wrap your head around. The average consumer doesn't want to do that. You know, they need to have faith in the person that's writing that list and the value that's driven from that. And, and to be able to navigate, you know, someone to navigate, the servers need to be able to do that, you know? And so we put this list out and like immediately my wine sales like quadrupled because people were coming in, you know, and at the time my most expensive bottle might've been like $95.
Yeah.
And I was like, screw it. I'm going to throw it out there.
Yeah.
And I started putting wines on that were $500 and $550.
Yeah.
And we started selling them.
Yeah.
And I realized, well, I was underestimating my consumer. And, you know, and I'm not saying we sell those every day, but we sell a lot, you know. And I mean, we sold a couple $800 bottles of wine last night.
Yeah.
Well, that retail for $800.
To be fair, the food's on par with spending $800 a bottle.
It is.
It really is.
It can be an incredibly magical experience.
Yeah, it is.
And, so then next thing you know, I got this email from Wine Enthusiast magazine that says, you know, you've been nominated for the top 100 wine restaurants in the country. And to be honest, at first I thought, nah, this is bullshit.
Somebody's spamming my email.
Some dude is sitting in China, banging out emails, trying to get my credit card. And,
yeah.
You know, you've been nominated, but it's $10,000 to buy an ad or whatever. So I thought, okay, whatever. And then, like, you know, I responded to it and they had a questionnaire and, you know, it's going back and forth. And I literally did not know if this was real or not until the magazine came out and I opened it and there's this big map of the United States and little Ohio, heart-shaped Ohio, has one restaurant and it says Wildflower Cafe. And I was like,
let's go.
And the beauty of it was, you know, the notoriety is awesome. Like being recognized for something is awesome.
Yeah.
What I felt more passionate about was that it validated what all my customers said.
Mm.
That and all those haters can shove that magazine down your throat now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's not just me. And I didn't pay a dime for it. I've never advertised. I've never advertised, period.
Yeah.
I've never done a happy hour. I've never done a coupon. I've never done anything.
It's the best.
And, you know, so that was really nice. You know, I think our customers felt the same way, that when they're saying that, and they come in and they see that award on our wall, knowing that they said that 5 years ago, 6 years ago, and then they see that, they're like,
yeah.
And a lot of that is, you know, I've learned at the cafe, you know, when I opened my business, and this was not intentional, this was like, I was throwing darts when I opened the restaurant, but watching people come in, and when I opened, I had four tables. We were breakfast, brunch, and lunch. I was 6 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Saturday. We were living upstairs,
yeah.
My wife and I, four tables. I sat 16 people.
How old were you?
24 when I was 23 maybe when I bought it. 24 when we opened, I think. It took me a year or so.
So you bought a restaurant?
Bought the building, yeah.
At 23-ish.
Mm-hmm. 2007
okay.
is when I bought it. And I bought it in like June, I think.
Yeah.
And then the market crashed and the whole world got lit on fire.
Yeah. For those of you who are watching this on video here, although Todd does look like the most interesting man in the world, he is kind of, yet he's way younger.
Reasonably interesting.
He's wise beyond years, but yeah. So 23, you bought, I mean, 23 is the average age of like your Starbucks barista, right? Like, or somebody who's just getting out of college and trying to figure out their life, but you already have had it figured out. You're going to buy this, what was a house at the time? Mm-hmm. Or was it a restaurant at the time?
No, it was a house. It was, okay. It was built in 1906 as a two-family property.
Hmm.
And I don't know the original layout. I think they had a shared kitchen. And there was two families living there. When I bought it, it had been a rental property, I think, possibly its entire existence.
Hmm.
I don't know, because I don't know how, you know, the town that we're in Mason, Ohio, which is right by Kings Island for you guys, if you ever heard of Kings Island.
Yeah.
I'm 2 miles across the highway down the street. I looking at maps of Mason in 1906, there was only like, I'm exaggerating, but there was like six people that owned all the land.
Yeah.
And so when you see these property maps of what they held, I think it has been a rental, which is really odd, you know, two family rental for 118 sure. years,
yeah.
almost, you know. So, so we bought it, we remodeled it, I wish I knew what the layout was. It was a total dump.
Yeah,
I mean, it was bad, and it was really a bad purchase. I paid way too much. The guy that I bought it from paid $40,000 for it. And I paid a lot more than that, but it's, you know, I wanted to have a place where we could live.
Yeah.
So when I was 15, you know, shortly after the story I just told about washing dishes there and listening to music and that, and within the next 6 months, I decided this is what I want to do. I want to own a restaurant.
Yeah.
And I want to be a chef. And I got attracted to the front of the house as well, because I like talking to people and all that. So I always kind of did both. That, you know, ended up being a great asset for the restaurants I was working at. You've got an executive chef who has a management degree, who can talk to people, who knows beer and wine. I was kind of the, you know, I was the well-rounded.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was in a position where I was the man because there wasn't anyone else that could do it. It wasn't because I was per se better at cooking. Like the guys I was cooking with at the country club, they were literally every one of them was better than me.
Mm.
I got better over time because of opening my own restaurant, yeah. Whatever. But when I opened the restaurant, Casey, Chris, the chef that I worked, all those guys were way better chefs than me. And but I had the front of the house skills, and I had the accounting, and I had the business sense and, you know, management and those things. So so we buy this restaurant. We're living upstairs. I've got the four tables, and we just kind of went from there. And I saw, you know, I think I actually paid $3 or $4 per chair for the actual chair. Brand new from IKEA, total, like they would be like a classroom in the hood.
Yeah.
Is what it looked like.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
probably on a clearance at IKEA.
Yeah. And like, you know, used things and everything. Like I didn't buy any plates or silverware. Like people were actually bringing in silverware to donate to me. And
I love this,
you know, and I opened the business with $50,000. My business loan was $50,000. And I think it was at 11 something percent.
Oh.
And then I had to borrow another 12 grand.
Great rate there.
25% for my equipment, which was amazing.
It was like a guy like Vinny, like a shark looking like guy.
I never even met these people. I had some kind of SBA back loan out of freaking Washington or something.
Oh, and, no. And,
you know, it was like you paid four times the whatever, way overpaid.
Yeah.
By a lot. For a property, you borrowed 50 grand at exorbitant interest rates.
Yep.
You're way undercapitalized. You have no employees. You've never done this before.
Yeah.
Have no backing. You have no investors. What could go wrong?
What could possibly go wrong?
You know?
Nothing could go wrong. Let me just go back to a little bit of like what you said earlier with like, there's no coincidence. There is no like it's all circumstantial. You look at your grandma, you're like, her idea was to commune, right? Her idea was to bring people together, right? Then you look at the idea of like the experience and what you knew you could create. And then you get into this clearly very young idea that I'm going to do this. And with a very young heart, you set out and said, let's just do it. And I know you're just like, and I love saying this to everybody, action wins. Like, we could sit around and we could talk about, you know, interest rates all day long, or what I should do with this loan, or should I buy this place, or shouldn't I buy this place? And you could split hairs, and these are probably pretty big hairs you're splitting out, because this is, I mean, clearly some funny, I'd say even like crazy business decisions. Like if somebody was mentoring you through this, they'd be like, whoa, easy there.
Dumb.
No, do you even think, you know, yet action wins. So you got yourself into this awesome position, and thank God. Right. For all of us, they have the experience of the Wildflower Cafe.
I may not have made it if I was overcapitalized.
Yeah.
Because, you know,
scrap.
In hindsight. Yeah. Like, you know, I don't know if it's true for everyone, but for me, I do my best work when you put me in a corner and you grab me by the throat.
Mm-hmm.
When I have to fight.
Yeah.
That's when I'm really good.
Yeah.
And when you've got a debt that has to be paid, or you're going to lose your building. And, you know, we were simply, you know, our families were far from wealthy. You know, they did well for themselves and took care of us and raised us and did all that and had a great upbringing, but there was not extra money laying around for anybody to throw at me.
Yeah.
From anybody that I knew, you know, and you know, so when you're in that position, we had to buy that building. Part of why the pricing issue of overpaying was because I had to be in a building that I could live in. Mm-hmm. I needed a business and a residence in the same building,
right?
Because I'm planning on not being able to afford two mortgages.
Right.
And I wasn't dumb enough to rent from anybody.
Right.
I've seen that game in restaurants. That's, you know, most restaurants are paying, like, actually restaurants appraise at like the highest of commercial value. Restaurants are one of the highest. Because of the rental values and whatnot, which sucks, because it's not that lucrative of an industry.
Right.
So we did that as a facilitation because we needed somewhere to live, that we weren't gonna have to pay two mortgages. And even though we were at that 11% interest rate and all those kind of things, you know, I found myself in a position where, you know, the number one thing may have been embarrassment. Like the number one driver for me was that I didn't want to call my dad and tell him I didn't make it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That I failed. And I was, I literally, the day that I opened, Jenna was working full time as a teacher.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I she's going to shoot me if I forget this, but, well, she may not because she hears it all the time, but when I was 15, I decided I was going to open the restaurant. I was a freshman in high school in Mrs. Mills' English class, and I wrote a paper about who do you want to be in the future?
Mm.
And I wrote, I want to drive a Volkswagen Beetle,
mm.
which I ended up buying 6 months later.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be married to Jenna Hensley, and I want to have an organic restaurant. And those three things have never left my brain.
Mm.
That every single day of my life since then, that's what I want. And that's the top of my list.
Mm-hmm.
And so Jen and I have been married. We've been together pretty much the whole time. We broke up a little bit in college, but you know, mm-hmm. we were married and have two kids.
Yeah.
I just bought that Volkswagen Beetle back after 20 years of it sitting in a barn from some dude in Kentucky.
The same Beetle.
The exact same
car. I love it.
And I just got my license plate the other day and I had my first car. Is what some
no way. License plate is. No way.
And you know, so and I can't ever get rid of that car again.
Of course, yeah.
And ironically, we have Jenna's the car that Jenna, her mom had this sweet Jeep when Jenna was born, and she was riding around in the car seat in the back of this Jeep that didn't even have a hard top on it. Back in the winter in Ohio.
Oh yeah.
We have that sitting next to my Beetle, which is basically what I learned to drive a stick on. And anyway, that's kind of cool to you know to,
that's super cool
to look at your wife that you've been dating since seventh grade
yeah.
to see the two cars that you guys drove back in the day
yeah.
sitting in a barn with your kids playing in the barn is
yeah.
that's a powerful thing, you know, and make me very happy.
Yeah. It's powerful. It takes vision.
Hey everybody. I hope you're enjoying this version of the Next Level Podcast. It's John Sanchez with the Team Performance Institute. Please check us out online at teamperformanceinstitute.com, where you'll find everything from executive coaching to full-scale leadership development programs. And now, back to the next level.
It takes vision, you know, to do that. Vision, passion, drive, resilience. I love what you said about your best work being done. And, you know, we do a lot of work here on purpose, right? Like what's purpose? And I think that purpose drives our every day, whether we're acknowledging that or not, it is what's driving you. You've had this great sense of purpose and you find purpose in the valleys, right? Like you said, like, you know, we had Anthony Munoz as a guest on here. We had Greg Gadsden as a guest on here. Anthony found purpose in when he was really down and I had to go through three knee surgeries, found his way to understanding like and gratitude, like you said, to dig out of those depths and then go forward and then crush the NFL, be the best offensive lineman of all time. Greg Gadsden found purpose in losing his legs. He found purpose in his life at the deepest valley, you know, and then you're at this place when you're young, super young. I mean, think about it now.
Yeah.
When 23 years old, look how young you were and go, I was forced, not really forced. You chose that, but you didn't realize how hard it was going to be. And you wouldn't wish that adversity on yourself, but then you crushed it. Right. So the Wildflower just celebrated 15 years last year. There's a great Facebook post. We'll put that in the comments on here that Todd did a real quick, it's a 5-10 minute video about the resilience that had to be shown throughout the history of the restaurant. Talk to me a little bit about your purpose now, how you see your purpose, resilience, and the industry that you live in is, like you said, it is hard. Mm-hmm. It is not a highly lucrative profession. And it's really hard. Tell me a little bit about the adversity that you've had to overcome to be where you are now and how you see your purpose.
You know, I didn't really see it. You know, at 15, you know, when I made that commitment to myself that, you know, like, I can't believe no one talked me out of it.
Thank God. I'm glad nobody did, by the way.
I had one guy that owned a restaurant that was at a bar at Miami.
Yeah.
That I talked to and I told him that I was going to open a restaurant, you know, and he said, don't do it, man. It's the dumbest decision you'll ever make. And I see what he means, you know, and like, it's really a hard thing to manage. When you're 20, when you're 18, you know, working 14, 15, 16 hour days, getting off work and drinking a case of beer and getting up the next day and doing it again. That's not a big deal. And it's actually like a lot of fun,
mm-hmm.
you know, and particularly when you have that team that the two guys I was cooking with, it may have been four or five guys, but the chef that I worked for, his son worked there. Another guy that I think he borderline raised lived with him. And I'm literally part of a family, you know, and this guy had five kids. One of them married Alan, who's been with me for 19 years at two different restaurants. You know, I felt like a part of a family.
Mm.
And he was Italian and he's from New York, you know, so, you know, we had a lot of fun and I loved the guys that I was working with. Like I was proud to work with them. I thought they were better than me, skill wise. And they treated me with a lot of love and they held my hand a lot. And, you know, they were better than me. They had been cooking longer than me. They grew up with this guy.
Yeah.
The guy's name's tattooed right here on my arm, by the way.
Yeah.
The chef that I worked for, but you know, that I had so much fun. You know, we were sleeping in closets, you know, like at work. You know, if you had an hour, you know, we were smoking cigarettes, drinking beers, you know, and it was just so much fun. And then as that progressed and, you know, it becomes a habit and it's a positive habit because I'm putting money away. And it was never really about the money for me,
mm-hmm.
that I loved my job. I loved cooking. I loved the people that I worked with. And, you know, when you have that kind of job where you're like, when you love people that you work with that, you know, that's, and you're willing to sleep in a closet at work.
Yeah. Doesn't feel like work.
It doesn't feel like work. You know, like I really don't feel like I have worked a whole lot in my life and I probably put in three times as many hours as people have that are my age.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, so, but, you know, looking back on that, you know, I was blessed to have that scenario at that age. But I look back on it now and it's kind of, you know, I realize that the restaurant business is kind of there was an article that came out in 2020. And it was a group of independent restaurants and chefs that I was involved in. And the main guy that founded this wrote like an op-ed or something that was in New York Times. And he mentioned that, you know, the restaurant, and he gave all these statistics, that the restaurant is the cleanup crew for society.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, if you have, let's say a female in corporate America, and then she gets pregnant and she has a baby, she's taking care of it. And then the cost of childcare or whatever, you know, she may end up picking up two shifts at the local restaurant.
Right.
And be able to provide income because of the flexibility of hours and
right.
you don't need a degree and those kinds
right.
of things. And, you know, when COVID happened, behind the federal government, the number one employer in the country as an industry is the restaurant business.
Mm-hmm.
We had 11 million employees in the United States that were at working at restaurants. Right. So I learned, you know, there's this incredible diversity of backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
There are very wealthy people with master's degrees that serve at restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
There are people that have never seen the ocean and don't have a car, never had a license,
right?
That work in that same restaurant, you know, and I love that. Like, you know, one thing I know about myself and my network and situations that I really enjoy is I say this, a rainbow is prettier with more colors in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean that from cultures and backgrounds to personality types and everything, you know, that like the more diverse the room is, the more fun it can be.
Yeah.
Right. And I really enjoy hearing people's backgrounds and those kind of things. A lot of, you know, the restaurant business has negative. There's some negative things that have happened to people and they end up in a restaurant. It's adrenaline junkies. You know, kitchen is calls for adrenaline junkies.
Yeah.
You know, that you like being abused.
Right.
Because you are abusing your body every day. It is not, if you let it be, it's not a healthy environment. It's not a healthy job.
Mm-hmm.
You're on your feet for 14 hours. Your back hurts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot, you don't see a lot of 60-year-old chefs.
Yeah.
You do on TV, but in reality, you really don't. You go to, you know, most restaurants are going to be, you know, 30-year-old Mexicans.
Yeah.
Because they have the energy and the drive and everything else, but it's really hard to do when you get older and you're working at nights and weekends, you know? So the reason why I wanted to have my own restaurant and not work for someone else. And I'm saying this from the point of view of me being 21, 22 and dating Jenna. I felt an obligation that if I'm going to marry this lady, I have an obligation to be able to pay the bills for her.
Mm.
I need to provide security for her.
Yeah. Yeah.
And at least contribute. Right. And because, you know, the restaurant industry is volatile.
Mm-hmm.
I felt the most secure thing I could do is open my own restaurant because then no one's in charge of me.
Right.
That no one's going to be able to take that from me, that it's completely on my shoulders. And there's me having a stupid boss isn't going to harm me down the road, that I'm not going to lose my job
right
after 10 years of busting my ass.
Right.
And so I did that. And, you know, I wanted to have this breakfast and brunch place, cognizant of the fact that I wanted to coach my children's soccer teams,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is an exaggeration because I did coach it and it's not that fun. And I don't know anything about soccer, but by the basketball.
Way, I'm the worst soccer coach in Lebanon history, I believe.
I was really bad. So, luckily, my best friend Mike is a coach, and he was awesome. So, but anyway, you know, I was trying to set the groundwork for success as a husband,
mm-hmm.
and as a father. You know, because I think one thing that unites us really strongly is our passion for those two things,
mm-hmm.
our love for our wives. And we definitely hit 4 grand slams in a row, yeah, out of the equivalent park. Of,
you know, and then won the lottery.
And then won the lottery. Yeah. I think we've been really lucky in that world. But, you know, I wanted to be at least as good as my parents were to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to have at least that caliber of relationship that my parents had with each other,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I was lucky enough to have that, you know, for my whole life, that my parents were married and in love their entire life.
Yeah.
And such great parents to us, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, so what sucks is it sucks and doesn't suck was that you don't make any money doing that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one employee, 16 seats, living upstairs, I made, I don't know, this is my second year in business, I made $8,000.
Mm-hmm. Killing it.
And I'm working 75 hours a week, right? And I mean, and we were doing, like, my first day in business, we did $110 or something like that, you know? And that went on for quite a while, you know? And so I realized at the request of my patrons, I need to open on an evening.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, really fought against it. And I said, you know, I'll open on just Friday nights,
mm-hmm.
because to me in my head, that was an argument that I was having. I'm not going to trade being a father and a husband for this job.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you one night and the other 6 nights are going to be for my family.
Mm-hmm.
And we did more on the first Friday night of service than I had done in any given entire week.
Yeah.
And at the time, you know, the day that we opened our business with Jenna working full-time as a teacher, we had $243 in our bank account.
Wow.
And, you know, I was upside down on my car. I was, mm-hmm. you know, hanging by a thread.
Yeah.
I owed 10 grand. I opened a Home Depot credit card. And they had some kind of like 10% discount on your first purchase. So they approved me for $10,000. I spent $10,000 that first day. I loaded my truck up in a trailer. I just bought every possible thing because I thought, well, I have an opportunity to get 10% off and I'm going to use it all. And if I don't, I'll just return it or whatever. Yeah. I didn't know that that was capped at, you know, $20 or something.
Oh, no.
It was in the fine print. But, you know, I was really not in a good financial position.
Yeah.
So I didn't have the option to not do that. And that was nice too, because that at lunchtime, I didn't see couples. It on Friday night, it was 100% couples.
Yeah.
And I really liked that. And we let people bring their own wine in. Originally, we didn't have an alcohol license. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, that went so well. I had hired a server. I hired a dishwasher who's Woody was one of my, is one of my favorite people I ever met in my life.
Yeah.
An amazing, amazing kid. And he worked for me for 12 years, never had a job before. Straight out of high school, was in high school and worked for me for 12 years and became my sous chef and became an incredibly successful human.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was so proud of him. But anyway, you know, we added Saturday and I said, I'm not going to add another night until we fill that night consistently. So I did one night at a time all the way to get to lunch and dinner Tuesday through Saturday. And, you know, we went from $143,000. Our first year in business to just shy of $1 million at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And we literally did it step by step. And the community really loved coming in and seeing the $4 IKEA chairs.
Yep.
Seeing the place busy.
Yep.
You know, seeing the same people there, the same customers, the same. We had like we had this deal where it was like you would make a standing reservation that the Smiths would come in and say, this is our table at 5:30 every Friday, unless we tell you otherwise. And it got to where on Friday nights, you couldn't walk in or make a reservation because of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was really cool, you know, and to see these people and then get to be friends with them is how you and I met.
Yeah.
That's how I met Mark Lortz. And, you know, I met so many, the Taylors and so many people, you know, that I'm really close with because of that, you know, and that had been, you know, that there's challenges with that. Nights and weekends is where your work is.
Yeah.
Finding employees that want nights and weekends. You know, that we had so many young, the business itself, the restaurant industry has so many 21, 22, 23 year old females.
Mm-hmm.
That was, I would say it was over 50% of that. The average employee, I think, was 23 in the restaurant that was going into COVID.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're probably going to end up pregnant statistically.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to get married and they're going to do these other things, which means you're going to leave them. They're going to leave you.
Mm-hmm.
And to be to the way that it feels, I would imagine this is owning any business and maybe being the CEO of a business or something.
Mm-hmm.
There's this feeling of falling in love,
mm-hmm.
you know, because you're at work and these people are fantastic and you've got this great relationship where like, it sort of feels like you're falling in love. You fell in love with a person.
Yeah.
And you were married to them for 7 years. And then they come home one day and they say, I don't love you. I never loved you. And I don't ever want to see you again. And I'm leaving.
Yep.
Imagine that happening 2,000 times.
Yeah.
In 20 years, you know, that's a rough thing for someone like me to handle, mm-hmm. you know, because I put so much focus on, I want all of my employees to work for me forever.
Yeah.
And I want feedback about what can I do to make your life better and to do those things. And, you know, there are things that are going to happen. They're going to get married. They're going to move away.
Yeah.
They don't need the money. They're going to get pregnant. Something that is going to get in the way. That's not COVID. Great example.
Right. Right.
You know, and so that can be rough.
Yeah.
You know, and particularly another rough thing, seeing people go from, you know, working at Wendy's and not really having their shit together to 5 years later, really having their shit together, and then they leave you.
Yeah.
And they forget they were working at Wendy's when you hired them and you created this confident, mature, successful individual. And, you know, generally a year or two later, you'll hear from them and they'll tell you how much they owe you.
Yeah. I was just about to go there. I'm glad you did. So we are parts of people's journey, right? People come in and out of our lives. You as a owner, a business owner, and many people that have many people too, like you can just look across, you know, the restaurant industry definitely is a lot harder, right? The attrition rate is super high. The turnover rate is super high. Like you said, it's an adrenaline junkies, you know, piece that you can typically get hired in a restaurant if you don't have really any real hard skills other than maybe just if you can show up on time and you can work hard, you're probably the best employee ever because everybody can learn, hopefully can learn some of the skills of restaurant. Maybe not cooking. I don't want
to. You could probably anywhere in the country for the most part, you could probably walk somewhere, knock on a door at a restaurant and tell them that you need to start today and they'll hire you.
Yeah. And get going.
Yeah.
But everybody sees attrition in their business. Everybody sees turnover. And to touch on that for a second, because I think it's important, is it's not lost. I think all good deeds are for the sake of others, are all good deeds to help others, to mentor others, to discipline others, to work with others, to show people work ethic, to show people your passion, to teach them about the business or the simple ingredients of the food or why things are, you know, even how to set. I mean, I know you're a really good business owner, showing people how to set a table and showing people how to greet people and all these intangible things. Those aren't just gone when they divorce you, right? When they say, I'm out of here. I never really loved you and moving on. And I know that you care deeply. I've watched you struggle through some of those changes as they've occurred. They're not gone though. In my mind, I believe that those are passed on. Those are going to be, you know, if you looked at Woody, probably, you know, he's probably still utilizing everything you taught him. He's probably serving as an example to others. He's probably laughing when somebody else shows up and doesn't show up to work. He's like, come on, get it together. I
hope so.
Yeah, I hope so too. But it's there. And I like to think about it, it's not gone. And, you know, if you look at anybody graduating from college or starting in their 20s, they will most likely have 5 to 6 different jobs. So to think, when you're building your teams or you think about building, it's like you genuinely, and I desperately want everybody here that is part of my TPI family to be with me forever. It's naive to think that, maybe too egotistical to think that, yeah, you're going to be here forever. But I do hope that by coming in and having day one, and then however many days we have till day end, that we did some stuff together that not only helped the world, but made them better. And they'll carry some of those with them. Now, I guarantee I have made tons of mistakes, made all the mistakes. I haven't been the best leader or the best guy in the world to do all that. But I genuinely go into every day hoping to do my very best. And I think one of the things I'm learning is that vulnerability is so strong to say, hey, guys, this is my first day on the job. This is my first day at leading this company at this level. I do the same thing with my kids. Say, hey, kids, this is my first day of being a parent at this level. I've never had a 16-year-old daughter in 2 months and 3 days. This is day one. Mm-hmm. So have a little patience with your old man. I don't know everything. You are part of this earth. You're part of this world. And I get to be with you for a short period of time. Hopefully I'm passing on some of what I've learned, some of my perspective.
Yeah, there's a lot of joy that comes out of that too. You know, that you, to be able to look back and know, you know, some people I think have like an image of who they are in their head, and other people have a fact of who they are in their head. And to be able to look back and say, I know that I have tried to make this community better. I've tried to make my company better. I've tried to make these people that I work with better and so forth. And you know, when you're successful at it, you know, and that's an empowering thing. It's an awesome feeling.
It is.
And when you fail at that too,
yeah.
You know, that, you know, we've definitely both failed at that times.
Yeah.
And, you know, to look back and learn from that and to carry that weight as well, to say that, you know, I did screw that up. I should have done a better job. I should have been more, you know.
Yeah. As a small business owner, I feel like I say this often, like, man, I pretty much made every mistake you can make. You know what I mean? Like, and I think that's part of life. I think it's actually like going back to what you said, like, I genuinely love doing what I do. And so does it feel like work? Most of the time, no, because this is, I want to call this work. This is awesome. I'm having a discussion with one of my best friends. We're here just having a good time. Hopefully people can take a few tidbits out of this and use it for, but I feel like I'm just really lucky to have the ability to get up over time and time again. I think humility, vulnerability are the keys to being a small business owner, because you're going to mess all kinds of things up. And if you're not a small business owner, it doesn't matter. Like, you're going to mess life up. It's just getting up time and time again, being resilient, asking for help.
You know, to be honest, I like, there's probably not a day that doesn't go by that either, you know, something comes up in my head with business-wise, or that I don't think about you, or something that you've told me or taught me. And one of those is, you know, the post-COVID era of, you know, from, you know, we can go in as entrepreneurs and you can be the worker, you know, you can be the muscle behind everything, or you can be, you know, more of a counselor and a guider, and, you know, to help lead people and to try and create, you know, and there's a fine line in there of incomes that, you know, a lot of times the incomes are pretty good if you are the worker bee and you have no employees or whatever, and you're a carpenter and you're just doing all this great work and you're the man, and, you know, you get paid a lot of money to do it. But, you know, I think in the post-COVID era for me, because of my relationship with you and the conversations that we've had, I really try and focus more. I focus less on my income as a short-term, as a short-term game. I focus less on that, which I think is actually playing a long-term game.
Yeah.
And I focus on developing employees.
Yeah.
And for the last 6 months or so, I've been hitting that really hard of trying to, you know, be more of a leader than a coworker per se, you know, and I think that's paying off well, and to help people develop from A to B to C, you know, I that brings me a lot of joy too. And it gives me time to run my business, not work at my, you know, work on my business, not at my business kind of thing. And that gives me a lot of time to, you know, and even the meditations and all the things that I've been doing the last few years, pretty much a direct result of you. My happiness level is a 12.
Yeah, that's great.
You know, and I feel like my company is doing really well, and our track is exactly where it should be. And, you know, we're still fighting and we're still doing our thing. And but I think we're getting better every day.
Yep. To say that your happiness level is a 12 is really significant to know that, and people will look at you and people might look at others and go, well, it's easy to be a happiness level 12. You own one of the best restaurants in the world. You're a top 100 restaurant year. You're this super stud chef. You got everything going for you. You got a beautiful wife. Your kids are great. You got all this stuff. All true. But the reality of it is it's a daily battle. Like, it is a daily battle. Like, life is still tough. You are dealing with adversity every day. You work extremely hard. You got employees coming and going still. I love what you said about empowerment. Empowerment is a superpower, right? For your business, like, or for your life. Like, the more you empower people, the more hands you have working towards the greater good of what you, and beyond that, like, again, when those folks leave and they know how to empower others, you just become like the grandfather of, and then the great grandfather of this like empowerment nation. So, yeah, good on you. I've seen your employees respond, react, and there's no better word than love that I can say was the primary fuel to the cafe, to you, to the business. So I sit in there, I can see it. I'm like, yep, because they genuinely love you. They fail you often. I'm talking about your employees. You treat them with respect and love. Sometimes it's hard, and sometimes it's easy, and sometimes it's hilarious, and sometimes it's, you know,
kind of parental.
Sometimes, yeah, absolutely. You just, but I think the common thread, the common ingredient, if you will, is love. Like, there's that sense of life, and when I say love, I'm talking about everything. I mean, it's the hardness to it, the beauty of it all, and that's how you lead. I've really enjoyed that. I came to the cafe right in the center of the pandemic, like ground zero, and you brought all your employees together and you basically said, this is how I'm going to take care of you. It wasn't about how are we going to take care of the cafe. It was like, everybody's panicked. Nobody knew what was going on. everybody needed a lot of leadership at that point. And I really respected the way you just stopped the whole thing and said, I'm going to take care of you, knowing that if you took care of them, the cafe was going to be okay. We didn't know what was ahead of us. If you remember, it was, and very few of us can remember now. It's funny to go think about it. Now. It was full on Armageddon. And for a restaurant like yours, super Armageddon, because you don't plate food for the door. You don't, I mean, this is not a fast food restaurant. If you owned a pizza joint or a Chinese restaurant, you were going to print money, you know, and still probably are with takeout food, because that became a part of the thing. But
it was a really amazing, I mean, I cried for quite a while. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we got shut down. I sat everybody down. I made everybody come into the restaurant. I got a bunch of computers out and said, you know, everyone's going to file for unemployment. You know, everything's going to be okay. You guys stay in contact with me. We're obviously not going to go to work anymore, mm-hmm. but you guys come to me first before anybody else. And if I can't figure it out, someone else will that I know, mm-hmm. and we'll figure it out ASAP. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I sat back for, I don't know, it is a bit blurry. I would guess a couple weeks. And I called the whole staff one at a time. And I said, you know, we don't have to do this. Mm-hmm. We don't have to work. We don't need to do this if you guys don't want to. Mm-hmm. I don't want you guys to feel required to come back. Mm-hmm. And I think because we were so close, because we have that family feel, I didn't want them to think that they need to take care of their father. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't have mm-hmm. to take care of me.
Right.
You know, this is, I'm okay if you guys don't want to come back. So I said, I'm okay with closing and I can sell the property. I'll be just fine. I'll find something else to do. I'll get a different career. I'll open another restaurant. I've got plenty of options. But I spent the last 10 years finding you. Mm-hmm. And developing you and working on you and finding, you know, like, and I created this team that I thought was the greatest ever. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to come back without you. Mm-hmm. And that's not a pressure on you to come back. I want you to give me one time in your life that you're directly, completely honest with me and tell me if you want to come back to work. And then you guys all tell me individually. And then I'll make a decision whether we're going to reopen or not. Mm-hmm. 100% of them called back and said, we want to reopen. We want to come back to work for you.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and I'm glad that happened because that's at that point I was possibly the most depressed I've ever been in my life. Mm-hmm. You know, so much uncertainty and I thought I was losing my business.
It was awful. Yeah.
You know, I was losing $10,000 to $20,000 a month.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And for them to say that, you know, all of a sudden I felt, well, I've got a responsibility. Mm-hmm. Now I can't let these people down. They want to come back to work for me. They enjoy their careers and I have a responsibility to not fail them.
Yeah.
And so we got to figure out how we're going to do that. And at the time I didn't have a clue how I was going to do that. Yeah. And it was, you know, I did still fail them in certain aspects.
Yeah.
We never closed, but we got really close. And I lost a lot of them in that process. But I feel like we're still there. We're rebuilding. You know, I talked to one of them this morning. I sent her a text and said, we are back fully. And I would love to have you back. And I'd love to do whatever I can to bring you back. And you can work whatever you want to work. And because I really appreciated you. And
yeah,
either way, you're one of my favorite people and don't feel obligated.
Yep.
It's awesome. You know, and so.
Well, it's not only back. Most people can't remember that, how hard that was, that time, how crazy that was. It's not only back. It's back with a vengeance. It's mm-hmm. back. It's strong. You just put out a new menu this week. It's beautiful. People are really enjoying it. It's probably heading into phase, I don't know what you call it, 5.0. Like, who knows? Who knows? COVID plus and such a book. I could talk to you forever. I want to do this again. Tell people how to get a hold of the cafe. Is it wildflowercafe.com?
Wildflowermason.com.
Wildflower Mason.
There is a number of wildflower cafes, apparently. I've seen lots of pictures from people traveling. We are the one in Ohio. Yeah, wildflowermason.com is the best resource for that. Emails, articles, reservations, wait list, rep menu, everything is on there.
What's your Instagram handle?
Probably Wildflower Mason.
Wildflower Mason.
And yeah. I think the Facebook is Wildflower Cafe Mason, something like okay. that. It should be pretty accessible.
Yeah, we'll put that in the comments. So look up Wildflower Cafe in Mason, Ohio.
The Wildflower Mason page has links to the social media and our YouTube page. So we'll put this one on the YouTube page as well. Yeah.
Some people don't know like your hours as much as they're advertised and everything. So where are you open now? Are you taking reservations? What's the whole protocol that you have currently right now?
We are in Old Downtown Mason, 207 East Main Street, 45040, right near Kings Island off 71. The phone number, which no one really calls anymore, is 513-492-7514. We are open Monday through Saturday. And at the moment, we're 4 to 9. I don't foresee any contraction of the hours ever. You know, I would like to add more hours. I'd like to do some lunch again and so forth. And that's kind of based on everyone working from home or not. And, you know, how many people are in the office and how many offices are here. But yeah, Monday through Saturday, 4 to 9.
Great. A side business. Not even a side business, part of the cafe business, is the fact that you will do events or catering mm-hmm. for folks. I'll tell you, we do at my home for the people that I genuinely love more than anybody. That's all the people I can go get, the people that I can get to come to my birthday party. My company retreats for Team Performance Institute, for Anya's birthday party, for Julia Sam's birthday party, for you know, big parties. If you want to have a very high-end event, you will come out to people's mm-hmm. homes, serve, you know, 12 to apparently 60. Maybe I pushed the limits on that one a little bit. But
60's a lot.
60's a bit, but I appreciate you you doing that. But it is a wonderful thing, and you will, you know, travel all around the tri-state area, maybe even out of, I mean, I know you've done it for a few very select people, like out in like Colorado. Mm-hmm. So that's a very
a guy that owns a bunch of restaurants.
Surprise. Yeah, and blew his socks off, right? Mm-hmm. So I hope we get the chance to do this again. I know we will. Again, we could talk forever. I know we hit this with like zero scripts, exactly where I loved it went. But you know, an hour and 40 minutes into this, going to give our listeners a break.
Wow.
Yeah, I told you it'd go fast.
We're not even drinking.
Yeah, no kid. Well, not yet. Hey, buddy, everybody, thank you for tuning in today. It has been just an absolute pleasure to be here with Todd Hudson. Tune in next time. I really do want to get into like kind of the human performance around what you put in your body and how it reacts and how we can build on that, among other topics.
There is some really jaw-dropping statistics when you're looking at health and performance, mm-hmm. there's some jaw-dropping numbers that people wouldn't even,
yeah.
Worst case scenario, you wouldn't guess anywhere near the number.
Not even like performance, because you know I love you know competing and all that good stuff, but like really like health, like genuine health to feel better. We went on a vacation, so Todd and I share the same anniversaries with our beautiful wives, and we just got married literally same day, 10 years apart. And so we do an annual trip and we stopped in the middle of Tennessee at this fruit stand, farm stand, and Bubba Judd or Jessup.
Oh yeah.
Whatever comes out and he's, I don't know what he was wearing. It was
surprisingly, he didn't shoot at us.
Amazing. It was a modification of jean shorts. If you can, like, I don't even know what it was. And then Todd just like, you know, this fruit stand looked like it was going fall over. It wasn't a fruit stand. I mean, it was like on our old red wagon, and I was like, it was rusting out. And I'm looking at all this and I'm thinking, how are we gonna, you know, what are we gonna do here? And Todd immediately just pulls from it, takes it to our little we had a little place that we were staying in, a little home that we stayed in for our anniversary, and created over 3 days the best food you can possibly imagine. Again, straight from the earth, straight from the area, your community. So to those listening, you know, big takeaways today, you know, get out there, get out there into your community, try to thread love into what you do. That's what Todd does with passion. Go to farmers markets, pick up some great nutrient dense food and really test the difference between them. You know, take a look at an egg you're getting at Meijer's or wherever you get your eggs, and then go buy an egg from a local farmer, crack them open into a pan. It will blow your mind. It's been an honor to know Todd for all these years. It has been mind blowing, and we have many, many more to come, I hope. Really look forward to it, and thank you for joining us on the next level. Peace.
Hey everyone, thanks for joining us on the next level. We hope that you found a couple of tips or insights today that you can take into your daily life. To learn more about our leadership training programs, our executive coaching programs, and the Team Performance Institute, please visit us at teamperformanceinstitute.com or email us at info@teamperformanceinstitute.com. Hope you have an awesome day.